We're just talking with Greg Collins right now, letting him know how to, you know.
Is it make, on?
Yeah, it's on. We're recording right now.
How cool would that be with the real drummer though, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Right? Yeah, totally.
What are you doing? Look at that.
That's what we should do. We should get a drummer on and have a chat.
Let me introduce you properly. Yeah. He just wants to bully. You're so humble.
Yeah.
We have Greg Collins on, who is an ex-professional NFL player turned actor.
Yep. And there's a lot to unpack with all that. Thank you very much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And getting back to the drummer thing.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that story about Buddy Rich?
No.
Do you know who Buddy Rich is?
Yes.
The name is familiar for me.
Famous drummer. Huge, one of the greatest drummers of all time.
Yeah. Was he jazz or?
Jazz.
Yeah. Right?
Jazz Joe.
Right?
Yeah.
And he was on tour and he broke a hand.
Oh.
He finished the tour with one hand.
Really?
And nobody knew.
What?
He is so fast.
Really? So he was just drumming with one hand?
With one hand. And you couldn't tell. If you were listening to it, or you couldn't tell it was one hand.
Oh my God, I have to look that up
later. Yeah, absolutely. Is there footage of that at all?
Yes.
Really? Okay, we're going to have to look that up at some
point. I know there's recordings, but I think there's footage.
That'd be cool just to see the footage of him just, you know.
Yeah, one hand. He's so
fast. Bashing the skins.
Oh my God. Well, that's why he was Buddy Rich.
That's right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
We do that.
It could have been Buddy Poor.
Yeah.
For nobody's buddy. I don't know.
Yeah, there we go. Look at, he's on fire this morning. What time is it right now?
Oh, boy. I've been up for hours. Are you guys night persons or morning persons?
Oh. It depends.
Oh, you guys think about it.
Yeah,
that
it depends.
Means you're not morning persons.
I want to be more of a morning person, but I'm just not giving myself enough time to get a good quality 8 hours sleep in the evening.
I am naturally a morning person, but I've been having trouble sleeping lately, you know, because I think I was telling Tim the other podcast, my mind doesn't shut off. So I just keep on thinking and thinking, especially when I have a lot to do, because I'm very organized and I'm very OCD about things. So if I know I have a lot of things to do, I can't sleep. I want to get it done. Like the next day's work done all the time. I used to work as a personal assistant, and what would take another assistant 2 days to do, I would manage to do in just a few hours.
Then
I have nothing to do. And she said, I'll find you more work. I was like, okay, I have to change the way I work.
Yeah, you have
because
to
I'm working more.
Everything down.
See, I've never had that problem. My mind doesn't work anymore. So it's just,
oh.
What's next? What do we got now, right?
Just day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, that kind of thing.
So, by the way, Greg golfs as well. We were talking about golfing the other day.
Golf.
You
really?
Golf.
Do you
golf? I know you golf with Tom.
Yes, I golfed with the guys. I don't keep score though.
Yeah, that's probably the best way,
yes.
Unless you're like super, super professional.
Do you golf? Do you golf?
I just started again when I went back to...
Oh, that is my fault.
That is such a faux pas, would you say? Is that what you'd say?
I thought it was off.
What was it?
Yeah, that was...
It was my ringtone.
I turned mine off just in case.
Yeah. I'm like, I think mine's on silent.
Sorry,
but that's a case of beer for everybody there, Roman. That's the law of set. You have to do that.
That is a huge faux pas. Well, usually when I'm on set, I actually leave my phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
In my trailer.
Hey, we live and learn, don't we?
Yeah.
We live and learn.
Yeah.
What was I saying? Oh, yeah. I just played my first half round of golf in Brisbane when I went and visited my family again.
And he sucked.
Yeah, I was terrible. I mean, every now and then you just hit like that
totally
sweet shot.
And
you're just like,
you
oh, yeah, it's all
I know,
worth
we
it.
We should go together because...
I would love that.
We would go. I would go and...
Oh,
I have
you
a
should
couple
go
shots.
With the boys.
Yeah,
I have
totally.
A couple shots that are like... Wow, look at that.
Hey,
that I get a par.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg, for inviting me.
And the next one would be a 10 and going. Oh,
by the way, how I met Greg, which is really funny, was all men. It is a bit of a boys club, the Friday,
right.
You know, at Joe, it's close to
Taste.
Joe, at Taste, Joe yeah. Montagnana's restaurant, which Joe goes to as well. I never saw him there, but they closed down recently.
Yeah,
so there's no
down.
More Fridays at Taste.
So how did that all come about? Like what's the annual Friday kind of?
Well, I have no idea how, do you know how it came about?
I don't know how it came about, but I know how I was introduced to it being like the one female, I think that was ever there.
There's not many females, you're right.
Yeah.
There's a few, but not many.
But I was introduced by a friend of Tim DeKay's.
Mm-hmm.
I met a producer named an actor named Tom Novak through Tim DeKay.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom and I became friends because we were working on some projects together. And then he said, hey, do you want to come to Taste on Friday? Meet the boys.
Yeah.
I said, boys? Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
And I met, and Greg was actually, you were one of the first people I met.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
So what,
so
what,
friendly.
What's, is it so just, nice. Is it just a, obviously.
It's really Joe Montana's place.
Yeah.
He's a huge Chicago guy.
Mm-hmm.
Places taste of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Chicago food, stuff like that. And all these actors who are connected to Chicago.
Oh, okay. I get you. I get you.
Actors. If you got an eye for actors, you'll go in there and you recognize all these faces from all these movies years and
every
years and years
every single
ago.
One is a recognizable face. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's
amazing. I know that person.
And yeah, you're right. And there are guys that are like, wow.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. What's the guy, the author, that guy, the playwright? He's from Chicago. He's...
Is David Mamet from Chicago?
Yes.
Yes. There you go.
He came in one day.
Ah, nice.
That's David Mamet, right?
Oh, I wasn't there that day.
I know.
Oh, man.
Darn it.
You know, but a lot of these guys that pop in and it's like, just guys from Chicago.
Nice. You know? And how did you...
I got him because I flew over Chicago one time.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
I was on Criminal Minds and I spent some time with Joe because we were in the scenes together.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I did two episodes, which I guess they don't really do, but it was one season, then another season. Not the same guy.
Oh, yeah.
And we spent a lot of time talking. He says, why don't you come? And he invited me down. I think what happened is I told him a football story about a Chicago Bear, and he went, I think that impressed him. So he was
was it a black bear? Brown bear, which resides in Chicago. You met him.
He's an Asian bear.
Very nice. Very nice. So how did you go from NFL? Was it known as NFL back then, or is it something
it
else?
Yeah, it was the
NFL. It was back NFL back then.
Yes.
They never had a different name. Like, because I know rugby national league back in Australia has changed its name a number of times, like ARL, NRL.
You were a San Francisco 49er.
Yes.
As well as a couple of other teams. What were the other two?
Seattle, mm-hmm. San Francisco, Seattle, then Buffalo.
What was your favorite? You can say it now. It's fine.
My favorite. I wish I stayed with San Francisco. That was the original team. But Seattle was really nice also.
Yeah. Just
and you
rained
were,
all the time?
Yeah.
And you were a linebacker?
I was a linebacker.
So did you play high school and college football?
I played high school in Detroit, Michigan. Mm-hmm. There was a Catholic league out there, and we had a team there. And then I went to a little school in Indiana for college. It was a little 100 miles east of Chicago.
Nice. And how did you end up playing for the 49ers?
Well,
it's a little bit different now compared to...
The main things are the same.
Yeah.
Training and everything is way different now.
Yeah.
But they have a draft.
Yeah.
And you were scouted? Somebody saw you and scouted you?
Yeah, they have scouts everywhere. They're always looking. It's like a whole factory. I mean, they have scouts everywhere. They find out if you're any good. Back then, maybe not so much because they picked me.
No.
I mean, you made it into the NFL. You have to have some damn skill to make it into the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
come
what
on.
They say. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Dan's right.
Yeah,
we were just talking about this.
They're not just getting Joe Blow off the street over there. Hey, you want to come and play for the San Francisco 49ers?
This with Steven the other day. It's just like you have to have. This is not subjective. You have skill or you don't.
Yeah.
For athleticism.
I think. Yeah. I guess. And then I came and then that killed that whole theory.
and did you retire for like injury or something like that? Or you just,
no, I played for 3 years and finished in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And Chuck Knox was the football coach then. And didn't work out and he cut me and I couldn't get back on.
Oh.
So I got 3 years plus a... you know, practice 2 days, whatever you call it.
That kind of thing.
Training, you know.
And how
I can't think of the name anymore.
And how was that after? Because was that your life up until that moment?
Like I grew up a little different. You know, some guys I always dreamed to play in the NFL. Yeah. Or some guys I'm playing, that was their thing, you know. For me, I was, you know, in high school I was, wow, I might get a scholarship to, and then next thing you know, I got a scholarship to a big school, and it's wow, look at this! I was like surprised at every.
This is fun,
yeah. And then college was the same way. We did college, and it went pretty well. And then the draft came, and back then, Well, now what they do is they fly all these big guys to New York and they sit there and they're televised. They've got cameras on them. Every time someone picks somebody, they get the oohs and ahs, and the guy who gets picked is all excited. And the other guys are like, pick me that time. They should have picked me.
Yeah.
You know, but back then, my roommate was a first round pick. He was the 10th pick by the 11th pick by the Rams, the team here when the Rams were in LA the first time. But the day of the draft, we're sitting there and he goes, "So, Greg, what do you want to do?" "I don't know. This is draft day, right?"
And, I love this.
And we knew he was a big guy. He would go, you know, he was a big pro prospect. And, well, let's just sit around and see what happens. I was just, okay.
Oh, my God.
It was, I swear, that's what we did. So we sat around and he was from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I was from Detroit, and he had all his country music stuff. And he had a...
Was he a Sooner?
Yeah, he loved Oklahoma.
He loved the Sooners.
And he had a reel-to-reel, right? Do you know what that
is? Yes.
And that's how he listened to his music. And nobody listened to music on but he had this, you know, he had Charlie Pride, all his country music, and Jerry Jeff Walker, and all these guys on there. And then we just listened to that stuff. And sure enough, he gets a call by the Rams. Oh, and man. It was Mike Fanning. This is, I can't remember the guy's name, from the Los Angeles Rams. I just wanted to know, we picked you number 11. And we're glad to have you. Welcome to the Rams. And we'll have somebody call you this week.
And that's that. No that fanfare, no...
Nothing. No, that was it. No. It was like, Greg, I just got a call from the Rams. Looks like I'm going to the Rams.
Oh, well done you.
Were you hoping for a call?
Well,
it was just not your dream.
No, I was definitely hoping for a call. At that point, you're hoping for a call. But yeah. I don't know. He was first round. But, he was really good. And then, so we sat around some more and we thought I might get a call, but we didn't know. But so I got picked. I got a call from the 49ers in this is the second round now.
Okay.
I can't remember what number it was, but second round. And it was the same call. Hi, Greg Collins. This is somebody from the 49ers. I can't remember the name.
It's funny you remember your friend's name, number, and the person who called him. But you can't remember
mine.
What he was listening to on the reel-to-reel.
Yeah, so that was it. We were both drafted. And
same state, too. That's pretty good.
Same state. And that was it.
And then did you just get drunk afterwards celebrating?
Truthfully, what happened is I don't drink, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't either.
So. No, you don't? But I've always been on my
own. I do.
I have five brothers and they all drank.
Yeah.
And everybody drank. So I was just a weird guy. But it wasn't because of health reasons or I'm working out. I just didn't like the taste of anything.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, so it wasn't a big deal for me. But that day, and I was kind of a crazy guy and everybody's always offering me drinks. I would throw them away or do something. But that day I took the drinks and that was my...
First initiation.
Time I was drunk, yes. Oh,
and how was that? Was it a blissful moment?
Where
were you throwing up?
No, I wish I did. And it verified one of my feelings. Like, what do you guys do this for? I feel terrible. This is a mess. And the next day it was terrible. So it was easy. So I never drank.
No.
You know, people still think you're a bit of a weirdo if you don't drink. I was always the weirdo.
Do they? Still?
Like, yeah. Well, now they, I was at a party not too long ago and there was this guy next to me, and he was in Alaska. We were just chatting away, and there was an open bar. He kept on getting up for a drink, offering. He says, "Can I get you anything?" And I said, "No, I'm cool." And he offered me three different times, "Hey, I'm going to go get another drink." You know, I was talking to him the entire evening. And finally, he came back the fourth time. He goes, "Oh, my God, I just realized I am so sorry. I've been pushing drinks on you all night. How long have you been sober?"
Oh.
he thought that,
like, no, I didn't go down that road.
And I said, "No, I just don't drink. I don't like the taste of it." Yeah. I drank on my 21st birthday and I really thought I was going to die. I was sick. I was puking and it was dangerous because I was practically passed out in a parking lot thinking I couldn't move and I was actually scared. Mm. My friends were inside doing whatever.
Yeah, I've had some bad times myself.
So. But this is actually what happened. True story. And this is why I never drank after that was because I started praying. I was like, "Please, God, please let me sober up. Please let me sober up right now. I will never drink again. This will never happen again." I'm not kidding you. I was, I was, I was on my back and I sobered up in a millisecond.
Really?
Everything. And I sat up and I was sober.
It turned into a religious experience.
It was. Wow. It actually was. And, wow. And I kept my word.
That's interesting. That's never happened to me.
Isn't that funny though? When you don't drink and they say, oh yeah, about the sober thing. Because I remember one time going with a friend to AA and I wanted to see what it was like. And they said, well, I don't drink. But come on. 10 people, different people from had come up to me and says, oh, great. That, you know, like that answered all their questions about me was that I was sober. They're like, oh yeah. I said, no, I just came with my buddy. No.
You can admit it. It's okay. That's like, the first step. Admit. The whole thing, you know, how people, you say some people get weird when you don't drink. It's not you. It's how the fact that you've decided not to drink makes them feel. That's how I see it. Like, you know, like with your bunch of friends is, why aren't you drinking? Oh, come on, man. Don't be an idiot. Have a fucking drink. All that sort of stuff. And it's because...
Wait, we can say drink on this thing?
Yes, yeah. We can. We can swear. We can say whatever the hell we want.
Go ahead. Say the C word.
I'll wait.
What's the C word? What word is that?
The cunt.
You can say that on this one.
Yeah. But it's the way I see it is like some people get weirded out because they think that you're like doing something healthy for yourself and therefore you're making them feel like, oh, I'm doing the wrong thing or I'm not doing like I'm being unhealthy by drinking. And they project that onto you by calling you a weirdo and stuff like that. Obviously, it's not the same for everybody, but that's been my experience. If I've decided not to drink, they're like, why aren't you drinking? As though like you're being some
like that makes sense.
Wrong person in your group as though you're not having fun and you know, all that sort of stuff. That's how I kind of see it. But
I was gonna say, because it definitely kills my social life now. I just avoid it.
Yeah. I mean, I have like one or two and then I'm like, oh man, because I don't really drink too much these days anymore. I mean, in my 20s, woof. Oh dear.
You shouldn't be with your heart condition. What are you thinking?
Well, you know.
You have a heart condition.
I do. I have congenital heart block, which I have a pacemaker for, which I got when I was 17 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Last year.
Sorry? Yes. I'm only 18 years old.
He can vote now.
I can.
But not in this country.
That's right. No. Yeah, I've had that since I was born. My parents thought that I was, well, the doctors thought I was going to be very kind of not very active and do a lot of activities that didn't require like too much physical exertion. But I went completely against what the doctors thought. I was playing sport. I was this. I love sport. I was very, very active and I was used as a guinea pig a lot in the hospital for medical students. Here are his signs or vitals or whatever it is and try and determine what's going on. This is what he does. And they're like, we don't know. It sounds like this and sounds like this, but his behavior doesn't suggest that this and all that sort of stuff. So growing up, it was in a weird way, it was kind of cool to have this heart condition because I got all this attention that normally I wouldn't get. And, you know, even when I had a Holter monitor put on, which is a 24-hour kind EKG, I would like run into school with it and there was this big brick back then. Like it was like one of those old school for mobile phones. And I'd be like, I felt special and different. And so it's never been.
Is this why you became an actor? You still want the attention, don't you?
Probably. maybe deep down subconsciously, that's the reason why I'm an actor want the attention.
But I feel like a lot of actors feel that. I don't know how you feel and actually I want to know, how did you segue into acting from being a professional athlete?
Did you just mosey on into it like your NFL career?
I was when you said you're a guinea pig. I was a guinea pig once.
Oh, really?
This is back before helmets on motorcycles.
Oof. Oh, wait, what? I'm like, where is this conversation going? Being a guinea pig.
You saw it in, you know, James Dean, Rebel Without a Cause.
Jump on a motorcycle and you ride. It's the best.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see people doing that today anyway. Not on a motorcycle, but like on bikes and like push bikes and stuff like that. Like they don't care.
Oh, it was the best. Anyway, I mean, it's a hot, sunny day. It's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm riding a motorcycle and it was so hot. I had my shirt off and no helmet. And I was in Beverly Hills. Traffic was slow. And of course, there was this pretty girl on the sidewalk, and I'm kind of staring at her, trying to drive. I stop and go traffic. And of course, I'm staring, the car in front of me stopped, and I was probably going 10, I mean, not very fast, but it was fast enough for me to go flip over the top of the handlebars onto the trunk or the hood of the car in front of me, and then roll over the side. And I hit my knee on the brake or something going over the top, and I put this, it was like an L-shaped gash about 4 inches Oof. By 5 inches, and it flipped over. The skin just flipped over, so you could oh. see the tendons and everything oh, right there. No.
Juicy.
And I never looked at it, but oh, I just laid out there.
I would have.
And it was, you know, on Wilshire Boulevard, just right there in Beverly Hills there by the Bel Air Hotel, I think. Mm-hmm. Ambulance comes, and before the ambulance comes, this beautiful girl comes up. And she's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm kind of, you know, how you're kind of in shock and you don't want to admit it, but you're functioning, but you're like,
"Yeah."
I'm just, I think this is an angel. Aww. And she was just, "Are you okay? Just lay down. You'll be okay." Like,
did you marry her?
I wanted to. I wish I could have loved her. Then the ambulance come, they whisk you away. But anyway, as a guinea pig, I'm in the hospital and they took me to UCLA, which is a teaching hospital. So I'm laid out there and my whole knee is revealed under the skin, right? Oof. So they brought in about 15 students and they all come in there. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that. Look at it. They wanted to touch it and look at it. I go, wait.
My leg's busted open. Like you a half help an me hour, out here?
They brought them in and they're looking at my knee to see what the bones look like. I was like a cadaver or something.
Did they give you like a sedative to kind of like...
That's how I got in SAG.
What?
I was like, wait, what?
They filmed it. And I was, that was there my you go. First, that was my
they
first
released
part.
It, and there we go. Fantastic, fantastic. I mean, did they give you like painkillers to like while you?
No, were... I couldn't. You couldn't feel it then.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know how you're in that local shock thing.
Oh,
you
okay,
know?
Yeah.
Now, when they started stitching up, they gave you the painkillers.
Yeah, yeah, because that's when you start to feel it.
Well, I was in a car accident in 2012, and it was a really bad one, and I had a crushed. Sternum, my rib cage was completely shifted. Oof. I mean, it was bad. I mean, there was a lot of other injuries, but yeah, I didn't feel a thing.
It's funny how that works, didn't. Right?
I felt it the next day.
Yeah.
And then I was like, "Where are my painkillers? Where are my painkillers?" I was, and but actually, when I was, because my dog was in the car next to me, and I was actually more concerned about him. He was a little guy, and thank God I had him in a car seat strapped in, and because he would have gone right through the windshield.
Yeah.
Wow. I was T-boned at about 45 miles an hour on my side of the car, and there was blood all over him. So I was freaking out, and I was like, my dog is hurt, and he's shaking, of course. And a bystander comes by, and I guess I'm bleeding just everywhere, and I said, my dog, and she goes, he's fine, and she checks him out, he's fine. I'm like, oh, but there's blood all over him. She goes, it's your blood, it's okay. I said, oh, thank God.
Am I okay?
I didn't care.
As long as the dog's okay, I'm fine.
Honestly, I really didn't care, and I just remember saying, okay. I looked at her. I said, great, he's fine. I go, make sure he comes with me in the ambulance. I go, I'm gonna pass out now, and she goes, don't, and she kept on talking to me, and I just remember. Kind of her going in and out.
Oh my God.
And but I do remember saying, I was like, I'm not going in the ambulance, my dog goes with me, my dog has to go. I mean, because I was in shock. I didn't really know what I was thinking.
It's,
I had glass shards all in my face. I didn't feel a damn thing.
It's weird that the body does that. I know.
But my whole point was that actually, because I refused to go in the ambulance without my dog, this was against protocol. They let him come into the ambulance with me.
Wow.
And so once we got into the hospital, then the fire chief, they actually took him away. And then my friend picked him up. But I kept on thinking, is he okay? I was a dog mom. I'm a real dog mom.
So, I was on a production, and the makeup lady was telling me about an accident she got involved in, and she was coming around a corner and like a truck kind of, I think, hit her or something like that, and whatever occurred, she got out of the car and sat on the grass and was just, you know, in shock, and people came and sat next to her and said, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine, I'm just waiting for my mom. And half of her hand was like just hanging off of her wrist. Hey. And she just looked down and was kind of like, oh, yeah, I'd need to wait for my mom to pick me up. And it's just that kind of,
weird
kind of, what is it, trauma kind of thing and stuff like that. But yeah, so
You guys want to hear about the acting?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, we can talk about whatever we want, but you know, like we can talk about gruesome injuries all for as long as we want.
I was never a famous football player. So it wasn't like you walked down the street and go, "Oh, there's Greg Collins." Yeah. No, it wasn't like that. So I did a few other things before I did acting. Actually, I sold memberships to private recreational vehicle campgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
How about that?
There you go. Let's talk about that.
We'd offer some people a couple free sleeping bags, preferably elder people who are just retired because they spend a lot of time in their RVs. And then we give them a couple free sleeping bags. They come out, we'd make them a special one-time only offer. If they bought this, they could have a lifetime membership to these campgrounds.
Oh, there you go.
Which is a good deal for the folks.
Right? Yeah.
I'm sure it was. But I didn't know anything about camping except what I learned there. Mm. But anyway, we started that in Seattle and worked our way down to LA. And by that time, I said I didn't really like doing this very much. I mean, I love talking to the people, but I wasn't really good at getting the money.
The selling.
Yeah, part thing, you know. And then I had a lot of friends that said, try acting. So I got into a couple workshops and that was it.
I love that. That's it.
That was it.
You know, I've actually heard this from a few people who've done very well in different careers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they just kind of fell into it. And I don't know. And I will say that most of the things that I've booked, it was like, meh. I had other things on my mind. I didn't care if I booked it. And those are the things that I booked.
It goes back to what Bruce Thomas was talking about. He's like, you just, that kind of like, yeah, you care, but you don't care kind of attitude. And it just, for some reason, that just oozes some kind of thing out of you that people see and they're like, "Ooh, this person doesn't need this job, so I'm going to give it to them."
Yeah, because people can smell desperation and it stinks.
Yes,
worse it does. Than body odor.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard so many stories of people who accidentally get into acting and become massive. Like I've heard, I think one of the, like Sam Worthington, who's a high up, who was the main one in Avatar.
Sam Worthington.
Yeah, well, I'm just making sure.
Okay.
Which one is Sam?
Sam is the lead of Avatar. He's the soldier in the wheelchair.
Okay.
Who has to replace his twin brother.
Right.
And I think he was. NIDA is a big acting school in Australia.
Yes.
And his friend. Kate Blanchett went there. His friend wanted to get into acting. So he went along with his friend to audition for NIDA and he was just sitting out there in the waiting room. And then they were like, "Oh, do you want to audition?" He's like, "Yeah, okay, whatever." And he did it and he got in. I don't think his friend did. And it just, you just hear so many stories like that of people just accidentally getting into acting and kind of like not really caring and then just. Their careers.
Well, Natalie Portman, she was discovered. You know who Natalie Portman is?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm better with the girls than the guys for some reason. I can't figure that out.
But she was in Long Island and she got discovered in a pizzeria. And, you know, and that led to her being in The Professional or, like you said, your play on. And, but again, it was, maybe it's just their destiny.
Yeah.
That's just it. Yeah, it's destiny.
Look at it like that and stuff like that. Yeah.
I mean, every time I've retired from acting, and I've retired many times, there's always something that brings me back in. And I wasn't even looking for it, but it was always an opportunity. Like I had actually, I was speaking the other day about how all of a sudden I had my availability checked for a huge, you know, for a series regular, for a huge new TV series. And I had retired. That time already. And that opportunity, and I was like, wait, what? And I hopped right back in. And I always feel like, okay, I'm not supposed to give up yet. And whether or not I'm meant to be, you know, a successful actor, I'm meant to learn something from this process or meet people along the way who I'm going to learn something from. And so you just step back in. I always have to be open to that. But I've done so many other things. There are so many things I still want to do. So,
yeah.
I think I've retired after every audition just about.
It feels that way. Yeah, it feels that way sometimes. How did you then kind of, you know, manage the obstacle course that is the acting career? Because you've got a pretty
extensive,
damn long
career.
IMDb. And you were in some pretty big movies.
Straight
like,
out
you
of
know,
Compton.
Like, Armageddon, The Rock. I mean, come on, dude. Those movies, that, like, when I was watching, that's some,
was that an
that's
accident too, Greg?
Did you accidentally work for Michael Bay?
Did
you sell him an RV?
I actually accidentally worked for, I played a lot of hockey, and I guess some buddies played with Jerry Bruckheimer.
Oh, yes, yes, right? Yes.
And there's a few of us that were like, there's three of us that were kind of nuts. And well, actually, those guys were really nuts. And I was long, I was like the laugh for the nuts, practical joke kind of nuts. You know, just fun to be around set guys.
Yeah.
And he liked us. And he's one of the guys that, you know, you always hear in Hollywood, if I make it, I'm going to help you out. Or, you know, if I get it, you're going to get it. If I get a series, I'm bringing you guys. You've heard those from your friends.
Yeah.
Right? How many times?
Yeah. And then nothing happens.
And nothing happens. Yeah.
But that's because my friends don't make it to series.
They're not like one of the biggest.
They don't have the power.
Yeah. But I don't want to get into that. But anyway, he brought me in. He brought us in. He put us on. The first one for us, for me, was The Rock. And we were on there for a couple months, 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, and had some stuff. And from then he put us in The Rock, and then Con Air and Armageddon and a few other ones there. That,
so again, an accident. Yes.
Yeah.
But that's the business.
Yeah.
No, totally. Like, no, it is. Friends cost friends, that kind of thing, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
You know, you're sitting there working your butt off to get, you can't even get an audition for these movies.
And then Jerry Bruckheimer goes, you know what? I like you. You played hockey. Come on up here.
But it's Jerry Bruckheimer or it's who else in the group that says, you know.
Yeah.
I've heard stories where actors would be like, some big actor would be in line and run into a little buddy. Hey, I'm shooting this movie. Why don't you come and be in the movie? Mm. Right? And I'm thinking all the people that have submitted and trying to get in, got an agent, a lot of that trying to get in for this. And this guy gets a job in the movie. Same residuals and everything. I was in a foxhole once. On SWAT. Remember the movie SWAT?
Yeah.
And
like with Samuel L. Jackson, that one?
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting next to this guy. We're sitting there. And we're hiding in the foxhole during this shootout scene. I don't even know if we had any lines or not, but we're sitting there. And
were you one of the bad guys? Or?
No, I was a good guy. I was a cop. Yeah. And we're, you know, sitting there. And okay, so I looked at him. I said, okay, who do you know? He said, I know the casting director. I said, yeah, I know the AD or something.
Yeah.
And they both got us jobs in the movie.
That's awesome.
But that's how a lot of those parts, I think those little parts are given, I think.
When you get those littler parts, it slowly builds up and builds up. Like, especially when if you're connected with a major movie like Armageddon and The Rock and Con Air, even if you've just got that credit, then your team can go, oh, this person was just in this. Let's get him in for something bigger. And they'll be like more inclined to go, oh, yes, please come on in. If he's in The Rock, yes, absolutely.
But I think it's also very impressive to casting. I was a reader for a casting director when I first got to LA, and there was an actor who walked in, and he actually had done some stuff. But the biggest thing that he had done in recent years was War of the Worlds. And he had a small part in War of the Worlds, and that's what everybody was talking about because it was a Tom Cruise film.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, he's a phenomenal actor. Mm. So that was
Tom Cruise.
But he was in a Tom Cruise film.
the other guy. No. I love Tom Cruise. I mean, Tom Cruise to me is just, I mean, he's just Tom Cruise.
He came and played hockey with us a couple of times.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do you play hockey? Do you still do it?
We played in, we've been to a few different rinks back then. I can't remember what rink we were at then, but he was just the greatest guy.
Mm.
And he would be, he would get the puck and just go. He would go. You know, he wasn't.
Is he good?
Yeah, he was okay, you know. He wasn't great. He didn't play, I don't know how much he played growing up, but he could skate and he played. He would go, he would get the puck and go all the way down the ice, take a shot or fall and slide into the boards. He did that 3 or 4 times.
Nice.
Because I don't think he turned very well or something.
Oh, okay.
But he would go, and he would sit in the locker room, which is after the thing, and sit and hang out and tell stories. And
he's a nice guy?
He's a great guy. I love that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you still have communication with him?
No. I don't No, I don't think so.
No. You don't think so.
That's never my thing.
But you know, it's interesting you saying that you're, because actually you and I had this conversation once because we were talking, I had spoken with your agent and I was asking questions. He's a great guy, yeah. But I was asking about you and I said, so how, how much has he gotten you out and booked you jobs? Because, you know, ultimately when you meet with any agent, they're going to try to sell you on stuff. And whether it's true or not, I always say you believe half of it, which is why I called Greg. And
they're salesmen, right?
Yeah. And they have to be. Yes. So I get that. But Greg, but you actually said that. You said, you know, you had done a lot of the work as well. You know, with the networking connections, and that's really important in this industry is to have that networking ability. And
I think it's one of the most important things. I mean, obviously you've got your craft and you need to be good, but then that can get you sometimes just so far.
Some of the most talented actors I know are not working.
Yeah.
And then how many times have you guys been in a workshop or an acting class for a long time and you just marvel at somebody's work?
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're not even in the union.
Yeah, they don't. I've been to acting classes.
That's so true.
There was a girl in this class, and everything she did, I go, wow. And I don't think she was in the union.
There have been people who've been out in Los Angeles, and they're so talented, and they've been here for years, and they're not in the union.
Yeah.
Then you have some untalented schmuck, right? Who then, before the SAG-AFTRA merger, you know, buys into AFTRA because you could just buy in. SAG was harder to get into at that time. Yeah. You know, I taffed Heartlead, so I felt very proud of myself, you know, right out of drama school. Mm. But I was really like, oh my God. But that was also something else that I thought, I don't need to get into SAG because I'm already British Equity. I can actually start doing equity work and actually buy my way into SAG after a year if I have enough equity work. Mm. And 2 weeks later, I was in SAG. So I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I
how did that happen?
Right.
I made a web series and got myself.
But you could do that with web series.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. But now they've changed it, so you can't do that anymore. So basically,
good.
I was a producer of this web series.
Greg's laughing at me.
I was a producer of this web series, and you just had to get like two SAG actors on the production, and we did a little bit of filming, and then that got me qualified to be in SAG, and then you pay the initiation fee, and then. You go from there and then...
And listen, you deserve to be in SAG. I think you're very talented.
Oh, thank you.
I
mean, yeah, because so, Spartacus wasn't a part of I had an after equivalent contract.
That came through another country.
Yeah. So that didn't qualify.
So that wasn't the union.
Yeah.
But honestly, when all these people started joining SAG-AFTRA and they were getting admitted and I'm thinking to myself, this was once a very exclusive club that isn't so exclusive anymore. And right, I realized it was because everybody was getting in, you know, through web series or doing this and getting themselves in. And
yeah, it's not the same.
And I didn't feel quite so special anymore. I mean, I love my union, don't get me wrong. They've been on set with me. They've come to make sure, you know, we're all doing okay, that, you know, the times that, you know, we've worked overtime, we didn't get paid, you know. I mean, the union was there. They've been by our side. So I love them. Thank you, SAG-AFTRA. Yeah.
But now a lot of productions.
But you know what I mean? It's not exclusive.
You get a 20% reduction in your dues this year for that pay.
That would be amazing. that would be amazing.
Are you listening, Gabrielle?
Yeah. But now I kind of feel sometimes that being in the union is to your detriment because they shoot all around the world now, and because you're in the union, they don't want to hire you because you'll be too expensive, and so they use local talent. So, like, it's very hard for you to get on some of these major productions because they'll hire like the one or two SAG actors, the big names, that kind of thing, and then the rest of the cast, they'll just like, nope, local, and so Americans or anybody in the union.
I mean, but that's just on the financier side.
Yeah.
It just makes a lot more sense.
No, I totally get that.
Not to fly over a bunch of actors. Let's you know, hire them from their country because it does get really expensive. And in filmmaking, it's all about the money. It's about the cheddar. Mm. How much can you save? I mean, independent filmmakers particularly, there was this guy, he did this whole package and graphic design and I was so impressed. And he says, I did that myself. And I said, what? He goes, independent film producer. He goes, we have to do it. We have to cut corners everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I understand that.
But then if you want to get on that production, like you're like, I want to be on that show. But they're like, okay, but you can't be union. But well, then if you do that, you'll get in trouble by the union.
But at least for you, you can go through your other union. I can go through British Equity if I ever want, which is why I have a British agent, because I have another union that will protect me.
There has to be, SAG has to kind of go, yeah, that's fine.
I don't think so.
Really? That's what I've heard. Like they have to have an agreement of like, okay, we'll allow you to do it this time.
I don't know, because I know several actors who are, you know, in British Equity and in SAG-AFTRA, and they've never had a problem switching back and forth. But but maybe they're just not telling me. But whatever it is, their agent negotiates it.
Yeah.
But they have never lost a job from SAG, even though they've been SAG. Mm. So go ahead. I don't know.
Oh, Romy, you and your phone.
You're so popular.
It's vibrating.
Okay, I called you. That was me.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, have you had a problem with that?
I have, actually. Yeah.
What happened?
Just one production, they wanted me, but then this production was overseas. And I think they only had a certain amount of SAG waivers or something like that they can give. And they'd already exhausted that. So they're like, we want to use you, but we can't now. We don't have no more SAG waivers. And so they gave it to somebody else.
But why did you not just go through your other union?
Because I wasn't in that union at the time.
No. But that's the difference I'm talking about. If you weren't in the other, you were only in one union, you would have to go non-union as opposed to switching from one union to the other,
right,
is what I'm saying. So this is why... I'm saying the people that I know have never experienced.
But the other side of the coin, it might be they might not have
had
a reason.
Just kidding.
No, I mean, thanks, Rami. Appreciate that. Turn your phone off.
They might not have had a good reason, or they didn't have, you know, the fortitude to say, no, we picked another guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe.
I mean, it could have been because they searching.
There's like a million different reasons.
Yeah, the reasons that they give you for not getting a job sometimes. It's,
yeah.
But for me, as I look back in the business, for me, the whole business is somebody saying, I like you.
Yeah.
I'm giving, in any realm, if you're a grip, if you're a focus puller, I like you. I could spend 12 hours there, 15 hours a day with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're good enough at your job.
Yeah.
It's your turn.
Yeah. Well, my manager always says, you need somebody to be a championing you.
When you walk in that room, if I walk in the room.
Like someone in power, like, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer.
But it doesn't have to be that. Just the whole, every step of the way. If I go in just for the casting director, if I walk in.
She goes.
And
he goes,
look like her old boyfriend who was a jerk. You think I'm going to get that job?
No.
I don't care. Because the next guy's going to be just as good as I am and he'll be just as fine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to get that job. Or if I remind her of the boyfriend that she wished she got.
I get the job.
I get a callback, right? Mm-hmm. Or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's the same way almost at every level, at every part. So I like you. It's your turn.
Yeah. That's actually what I kind of feel. Do your own thing.
I actually got a job that way once. Yeah. And it was a very small part, but it was an important part to get.
Yeah.
And I remember it was a friend at CAA who I was, you know, and I said, oh, I just went into this audition. And he goes, oh, you know, I know her. You know, I'm friends with her. Of course, they are CAA. They're friends with all
friends with everybody.
Agents.
Yeah, right.
But I didn't ask him but he actually went out and asked about me. And they had a few people they could have chosen. Like I said, they really could have just handpicked anybody. It was that small a part.
Yes.
And she goes, oh, she's a friend of yours? It's like, yeah. It's like, you like her? And he's like, yeah, she's really cool. She's nice. I got hired.
Sweet.
And that was just that.
They're the best jobs to get.
But they want to know that you can do the job once you get up there.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I know we've all had no problem with that, right?
No, we're perfect. Absolutely perfect. But they also, I think a very big important thing is like they want to know that you're going to be easy on set.
Yeah.
You're not going to cost them any money by doing any stupid stuff.
Trouble,
all that sort of stuff. Right. Yeah, that's a very important.
Well, this is why directors will take meetings. I know a very well-known director. I'm not going to mention him here.
You're not going to name drop?
I'm not. Well, he's an ex, so I don't want to. But he's but yeah.
Steven Spielberg's an ex.
I wish. No. But he's doing very well. Extremely talented director. Really nice man. I'm still friends with him. So I don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to name drop. I could name drop so much on this. But Dan knows. That's why he's laughing.
Yes.
You know some
yes,
of the
I
people
do.
That I know.
I do.
But I just. I just gave myself a plug right there.
Yeah, there you go.
That was so clever.
I know so many
yeah.
people.
No, but but he was filming this huge film, and he was meeting all the and there was a list of actresses and actors that he had to meet personally, and he flew in because he wasn't LA based, and I asked him, you know, why he was meeting them. Can he just choose who he thought was best for the job? He goes, I want to choose somebody I get along with that I like, because I'm gonna have to spend time with this person.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he, oh my God, he told me stories of these movie stars who were just crazy. He met them. I mean, I'm not gonna get into it here, but.
I know there's stories.
After we turn off the mics,
I've heard some doozies.
I'll tell you.
I've heard some doozies.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
From famous people. You
yes.
go, are you kidding me?
Yes.
How did you not punch that guy? He's like, oh.
I didn't want to lose my job.
I know.
Yeah.
Are they not in the asylum?
Yeah. Well, it's probably why they're so good. Because they need to go into an asylum. It's just that kind of.
Right.
It's
well,
just that
no,
extra,
it's,
like,
it's
you know what?
True, that extra bit of crazy that just makes them shine. You're right, because that makes them just
stand out.
Yeah. And there's something very engaging about that. And we're fascinated with that. You know, I had. I'm going to name drop again.
Oh.
A very good, you know.
Are you going to almost name, except actually name the name?
I'll just say he was an executive VP at Sony. And really,
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, it was.
And,
it was, yeah.
And he, and I remember I brought him a script once because I was bringing just, it was like horror films or, you know, dramatic suspense, whatever. That's what he liked. And he turned them all away and he goes, none of these, he goes, let me tell you something. When you look at a project, he goes, I want you to, he goes, find a project that taps in to the reptilian sense in all human beings, that cold-bloodedness that we all, you know, that's taboo, but we all find fascinating. I mean, look at Game of Thrones, that's an example, all the blood, all the incest, all the things that are taboo. We're like, oh my God, you know, he's sleeping with his sister. Fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, we just don't touch those subjects. And I understood.
Well, are they
meant.
Profitable? That's the reason.
They
I mean, obviously, Game of Thrones is profitable.
Well, no,
but.
They are profitable, which is why, you know, these horror films, if you watch any horror film or suspense film, you know, that tap into that reptilian sense, it fascinates us.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I do like horror films.
But even drama as well. But drama or, you know, look, 12 Years a Slave, you know, there's so much rape.
Horrible
you know,
shit.
And the, horrible yeah. shit going on, slavery, and it's just... And we love that movie because it's dangerous. It's edgy.
Yeah.
And so I think when we meet people who are, you know, just a little bit unhinged, there's something that's
good to
almost,
watch.
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
You work
it's
a lot,
attractive.
Don't
you? It's engaging.
Come on, you're unhinged.
I
can see that.
I wish I was
in,
unhinged.
I was a little nervous when I came in here.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're
I was,
right.
I wish I was unhinged.
Greg's just agreeing with me that Dan is unhinged. No, just kidding.
Yes,
no, he
absolutely.
Was. But no, but you agree. It's tapping into that.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a yes. Because well, when you get that, you don't know what's happening next, right?
Yeah. You don't know. Yeah. And that's exciting.
Yeah.
I've always chosen my boyfriends that way.
But when you're watching a show, don't you hate it when you're smarter than the movie?
Yes.
So you got the lead guy and he's supposed to be really smart and you go, he would never, that's stupid. I wouldn't even do that. And I, you know, what do you, there's no reason why. Then you go, or, you know, you predict the movie before it happens.
Yeah.
But it's not like an, it's like a really obvious, like, come on, that's stupid. You wouldn't, it's just.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that comes down to just like, okay, what's worked before? All right, let's do that again because we'll make money from it. Let's do that again. We'll make money from it. And I think that's where the, you know, some people get, you know, super bored with movies and TV because they just go along the same formula because it's like how they make a certain pop music and things like that. It's like, this is the formula. It sounds familiar to people as though it sounds like another song that they really liked. So let's make this movie or let's make this TV show because people be like, this kind of reminds me of a really good show that I watched years ago or something like that. And so they, you know, do the same thing over and over and over again. At least that's my opinion.
That's a valid opinion.
Thank you.
I think it's a valid opinion too. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
For me, if I go to a movie, I need a couple elements and then I'm good for 2 hours.
Popcorn and Coke? Yes. Yes.
But I need to like the lead guy or girl.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I like them, that's a big plus. If they fall in love, I need to love the interest.
Mm-hmm.
If I love this person and he or she is falling for an idiot, I go, come on. There's no way, right? And you want them to protect each other, whatever it is. And you want the bad guy to die.
Yeah.
If you hate the bad guy, you want him to die.
What if you love the bad guy?
Then that's an incredible actor. Mm. Oh, come on. Tony Hopkins is a... Tony.
Well, it's tricky.
Like he's my best friend. Anthony. Name actually,
drop.
No, because...
Name drop.
There he goes again.
Actually, I met Anthony Hopkins once. But I was working at a hotel. He wasn't my friend. He's such a nice guy. But yeah. He's someone who can play the baddie in so many movies. And you want him to win.
Oh, absolutely.
Rooting for him. But I was taught that in drama school. If you can play the villain and be likable... And Gary Oldman's another one who mm-hmm. you just want him to win, then you are a special actor.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you can tap into that. And so we were taught very early on, almost on the first day, somebody, you know, one of my teachers says, as an actor, never do what you should do, do what a character could do.
How are you finding, you still loving acting, all that sort of stuff? Or
you know, it's kind of, I have three little kids.
Mm-hmm.
11 and 14. And so my life is like that. And, you know, I used to always worry about the next job or, I used to worry about that. Oh, I haven't worked in a long time. Blah, blah. No, I just don't worry about it. My life is full and something comes up and every couple of months or a month, I get another job.
Fantastic.
And it just happens, you know. I a lot of pressure of getting a job is like gone. So it's like,
well, yeah, it seems like it's been a common occurrence of like that kind of laid back, relaxed kind of attitude towards things has been very beneficial for you.
Yeah.
Like, especially like, you know, with the draft and I'll do this. Oh, look, I'm in the NFL. Oh, well, you know, I'll do this. I'll be an actor. Okay. Oh, hey, Jerry Bruckheimer, what's going on? I'm going to be in Con Air.
Can we switch lives? Can we start again from the beginning? Can
it wasn't
you?
Like that, though. It was like,
there was a lot of ups and downs in between that.
Like,
kind of
I got to get the job.
Bullet point.
Oh, I blew that audition. Sucked in that audition.
How did you deal with all that stuff?
What stuff?
Like, you know, exactly what you were saying there. Like, oh my God, I blew that audition. I did this. I did that.
Oh, I was miserable. I guess sports, you're really competitive. And and just every time I lost and I didn't get the job, I lost. It was a loss. It was like, man, I got to win one
you
of these things.
You took it personally.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible. Yeah, it was.
Was it an interesting transition to go from being a sports person to an actor, or did you use the same kind of approach?
It was a very similar kind of a thing. It was like, you know, you're in scene study class because you're not working anywhere. So you're in scene study. That was your life.
Yeah.
And when you had a great scene, people applauded and you had that great feeling. It was like winning the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when it didn't go so good, it was like, we didn't do so good. And I'm getting ripped by the coach. Yeah. Just,
and the newspaper's going to bad review of my game.
So it was the same thing. And it was kind of, I think a big thing for athletes is if you're educated, and most of them are, is when you stop playing, you have all these options and trying to figure out what you could put all that energy into that would justify the victory. Because you're used to working 24/7 trying to be an athlete. You really want to be an athlete. But if you're just going to do some job, you know, it's hard to devote that kind of time to.
Yeah.
Because the end result isn't like a victory.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you're trying to, I think a lot of actors flounder for a long, I know I did. I got a lot of buddies that did. They just, because they couldn't figure out what they wanted to do next, that they wanted to devote that kind of time to.
Well, tell us about a time, if you've had that kind of time, where you were really at the lowest point in your life. You know, the struggle. I mean, you hear about Jim Carrey living in his car. You know, Hilary Swank lived in a trailer or
the
car.
The guy that wrote Mad Men, I think he carried around his script for 10 years. Trying to give it to people. And I think that was at some point where he was living in his car.
Matthew Weiner?
I think so.
Oh,
David Mamet?
He's no Matthew Weiner.
Yeah.
By the way, he's a really lovely man.
Is it really Weiner?
It's Weiner. God. Matthew
it's
Weiner.
It's not Weiner.
Weiner.
That's Weiner.
You must go that every time. It's not Weiner. Yeah. It's Weiner.
I've heard this since I was a kid, guys. Come on.
I would change my name, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Go on. Sorry, Remy.
Oh, yeah.
Interrupted.
No, I was just saying, you know, so a time like that where you...
Oh, yeah. There's times when I couldn't get a job. And I remember sitting on... I'd go to Griffith Park and work out a lot. And I'd sit on top of that mountain and just... I'd be in tears thinking, oh, God, give me a job. Give me a job. I got to get a job, you know? And once I had the kids, and their twins were probably 3 year old, three, you know, right in there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any money for Christmas. It was December. Mm-hmm. I had no money. So I'm thinking, I got to call my brothers and see if I can get some money for that. I mean, I was like panicking. And sure enough, the way the business seems to work, I get booked a Viagra commercial.
Yeah.
Right?
Things started looking up.
For a long time.
Thank you. That's my only joke for the day. I'm done for the day.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yep.
And
he's around all week, fellas.
But, you know, I was like, what am I going to do? Quit the business? I got to get another job. When you got kids, when it's by yourself, you can live in a car. You can do all that stuff. You got a long way to go. But, you know, with the kids but the print section of the job was like, man, that saved me for half a year, just the print section.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Was it a big campaign?
Yeah, it was huge.
Oh, man, that's fantastic.
But the guy who got the campaign after me, mm-hmm. he made, I mean, mine was a good commercial.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He made four times as much as I did.
Oh, my God.
He made money that he retired from.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Gee, what was the difference? Just
hit a different ad that he caught on. His was... he's a great guy. I played hockey with the guy, and he, I don't know if you remember, it was kind of a hazy. He had this old Camaro. It was a blackish gray. I think it was the way it was shot. It was a black Camaro, but the way it was shot, it looked gray, and it was kind of that kind of a gray, getting stuck out in the middle of nowhere, and he can work his way, you know, fix the car. I don't know. I can't remember the tie-in to Viagra, but...
Yeah. I probably, because I would have been in Australia at the time, so I probably didn't get it.
But it broke up into like 10, 12 different spots.
Oh, man.
Wow.
He made a killing.
I've heard pharmaceuticals. I've heard,
yes.
You know, getting into the commercial world. Just like, try to book a pharmaceutical. Even though they don't seem like the most glamorous, they run and run and run. And so I had a roommate, and she bought her house and her BMW.
Jeez. Is it as much money these days, though, as it was back then?
It's not, because most commercials I've heard are now non-union. I don't go out for commercials anymore. I've actually told my agent I don't want to and that started when I was, I dipped my toe into producing because I was having so many meetings and, nothing ever came of them, but it was so educational. I don't feel like I lost any, time, even though nothing ever came of any of the movies that I was producing because the education I got is priceless. Really, but I had told my agent. She always says I'm still friends with her. She goes, "Can I put you back out there?" And I did ask her one time. I go, "So tell me about this." So, well, you need to go FICOR, which is what is FICOR? When you go non-union,
you're still in the union, but you're not recognized as a union member.
Yes, and
I think John Voight was one of them. He was one of the first.
Well, you can, from what I understand, is you get all the union benefits.
Yeah.
You just can't sign your name on the thing. You can't vote.
Yeah.
But other than that, you can, all those.
And they look down upon you.
But you can go for union and non-union parts?
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
You can do all that stuff. It's not a very, it kind of weakens the union quite a bit, actually.
Yeah.
But it's all those movies you got turned down. If you go FICOR, you could do those things.
Yeah.
But
I like my union.
that is mine too. It's like I like my union. Then I thought, well, I gotta save money on dues.
It's not
don't pay as much in dues.
Yeah, yeah.
No, FICOR? Oh, you pay the same.
I mean, like it's no, interesting. Like,
you sure?
I'm pretty sure because a while ago, I looked into that because it's when I was struggling a bit and I called the union, and they said, well, you can go FICOR.
So the union said for you to do that.
They told me. They said, if you can't, you won't be kicked out of the union because it was something like, you know, if you don't pay for 1 month, you know, we'll let it slide. If you don't pay for 2 months, then you get put on probation and something like that. But she actually suggested I could go FICOR.
Interesting. Yeah.
That happens if you don't pay, because I go times where I wouldn't pay my dues for like a couple of years. And then when you get a job, you got a, what do they call it, station 12 or something. You have to go and settle your dues before you get
the, I may be completely
so
wrong.
So all the money you just made from the commercial, you're paying dues again.
Well, before you do the commercial, you got to catch up on your dues.
Oh, man.
So you
yeah, but so but I don't know. I mean, that's what she's told me. So maybe, maybe I'm mistaken. That, maybe my memory is doing something.
That would be an interesting conversation to have, like to bring someone from SAG on to kind of like go. Because like the industry is changing. And so, like, how is the union kind of, as you were saying, like a lot of commercials now are non-union. People need to eat. People need to pay rent. And then if they're like, I can't do this well-paid but not that well-paid commercial because I'm in the union and I don't want to get in trouble, like that, this is where the, I guess, the conversation can be had about, like, you know, how can we all, because as you said, it's just all about the money. That's all it is. How can we save money? How can we save money? How can we save money? All right, we'll be non-union. We'll pay these people like three times as less as what we would do if we were union or something. And then we don't have to pay them maybe residuals or this and this and this and all that sort of stuff. So we get away. I mean, I can't complain about that because that's how I got Spartacus. I was a local hire. They didn't have to pay me as much as, say, some of the SAG actors that came in and all that sort of stuff. So I benefited from being a local hire. And then the second and third year I was on after equivalent. And so I did get the benefits, but probably not as big a benefits if I was like in the full SAG, full contract and stuff like that. So
do you get residuals?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey. Is that your $5.42 check that you posted on Instagram?
That was for Chicago Fire.
Oh, which, by the way, I take some credit.
That is true. You did take me. You did.
Oh, I thought you said take you.
No, you said tape me.
I did.
I was at home audition.
Just a self-tape and stuff like that.
And I directed that.
Yeah.
I made you get sweaty.
Yeah, she made me put water on myself.
I go, nice. I want, you know, because he was in like, you know, in like what? A
parking garage.
A parking garage, but everybody was trapped. And I said, I want you to get dirty for this.
Get dirty.
But this is true. And I said this is true because the breakdown said Caucasian or Latino. And I said, if you don't knock this out of the ballpark, they will go Latino in this age of diversity. And you knew it too.
Yeah.
Because you were already feeling the effects of, you know, the diversity movement.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, we worked on that for a while. I had fun on that.
It was
like,
cool.
I had him on the ground.
And yeah, we did lots of cool kind of stuff things. And things like that.
Nice.
And I think as well, because self-tapes have become such a big part of the industry now, you got to make it work. You got to do whatever you can.
Well, I'll tell you, I worry about
it. It didn't look
about
like an audition.
No.
And that's what I try to do with all my, and you do too, because Dan also coaches in self-tapes, is I try not to make a self-tape look like an audition. I try to make it look as if the cameras just happened to catch a bit of your life right then and there against a blank wall.
Absolutely.
Do you self-tape a lot, Greg?
A little bit, and I'm not very good at it, but sometimes I, just to get something in, the last job I did, I was in Phoenix visiting a buddy of mine. He's a coach for the Phoenix Cardinals, the professional, the NFL team.
Yeah.
So I went to see him. And of course, every time you're an actor, you leave town, you get a job or audition.
Yep, that's what they say. Book a holiday and you'll get a job.
Every time.
Yes,
or you'll get like some big audition after you have an audition.
Yes. So I drove there and I was going to come back. I drove there on Monday. I was going to come back on Tuesday. So on Monday, I get a call for some job. And it was just one scene. It was pretty quick. And I just said, you know, I'll be back till late tomorrow. So at like 11 that Tuesday, they text me, say, look, if you can get a self-tape, you know, what do they call it? And by 4:30, you're okay. I said, no, I'm not going to bother with it. You know, so I'm driving. It's a 5-hour drive. So I'm driving and thinking about the audition. Maybe I should. We'll see. So I pulled over in the middle of the desert. I mean, I'm in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
Right? And there's nobody. It was just me. So there's nobody to do the other lines. So I just took my phone. I get out. I kind of look at the background. Cactus or more cactus, right? And I'm a cop busting a door, you know, trying to, right? So I just got the tape, held it up like this. And you can, when you look at the audition, you can see, you reach over, pick it up, and okay. And then that's, so there's nothing professional about it.
Yeah.
And I got the thing right here. So you can see my face most of the time, but because I'm not doing
He's holding
very good.
His hand right in front of his face, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
As if he's holding a phone.
Yeah. Okay. And so I do the audition. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And okay. And I swear to God. And I send it in. Yeah. Bam, got the job. By the time I got home, I got the job.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
So you just never know. You can do all this official stuff. And
I guess, as I say, like if you're right, if it's your right, if it's your role, it's your role.
If it's that's right. If yeah, it's for you, you'll get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool though. I think sometimes I like that really gritty, grimy kind of self-tape that you would send in compared to a super polished one. I think sometimes that kind of works. And I guess it's dependent on the role and
you
all
know,
that sort
I
of
think
stuff.
I think the end result is you could do anything.
Mm.
If it's like if you it's said, you, it's if you. It's your part, you're gonna get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
That's very, very true.
Good or bad.
Yeah.
Listen, I had a friend who never did it against a blank wall. One time there were people working outside. You could hear all of it drilling. And he called back for it. It was a huge, huge part.
Wow.
But he ended up not going to the call back because he was offered something else. Yeah.
He couldn't get the jackhammer in the scene.
All right. it was on the air conditioning, I remember, was coming on. And he didn't care. But I mean, he's a phenomenal actor, I will say this. And he has an edge to him. I usually tell people, you know, it's for myself as well. This is a numbers game, auditioning, mm-hmm. you know. But he had, you know, extensive resume already. And he was just, you know, brilliant. Actor. So he called back for 8 out of the 10 things, you know, or booked, you know, most of the things that, you know, he went for. He was that good.
Right.
So, but he had the resume to back him up as well. You know, he already had numbers attached to him, but he was still in the position where he had to self-tape.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, like, even like Sally Field had to audition for Lincoln, for Spielberg. Like, still some of the big.
She did?
Yeah.
Sally Field.
Yeah.
Legendary Sally Field.
Yes, legendary Sally Field. She had to audition for Steven Spielberg.
But that's not uncommon. I hear that's, you know, a lot of big, well, for certain movies.
Yeah, for certain movies. Yeah. I mean, obviously, probably like 99 out of 100 she will get offered.
Probably, yeah.
But that just one kind of rant. And it could have very well have just been like a chemistry read or something like that.
Or it could have been a lot of, you know, name actresses who are up for that part.
Yeah, like so a lot of big name actresses. Yeah.
Did she wear the big nun, flying nun hat?
Not for that particular movie.
It could have helped though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe absolutely. She had it in her car.
Yeah. 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 She's rubbed it for good luck.
She probably changed it in her car.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I got another commercial that you could get on here really fast. Remember those days? We had like three. Did you guys work then? You had four or five commercial auditions in a day.
I've never gone for commercials here, but back in Australia, yeah, we'd have a couple maybe a day. Mm. When I first got over here, I was having 3 or 4 auditions a day during pilot season, and that was just. Yeah, I don't know how you. Yeah, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you can do good stuff when it's just like that. You just go in there and go blah 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 blah, read it, and go thanks, bye.
Oh, no. I mean, they talk about the, you know, people say, because like, for instance, we're in a slow season now, but I know people who are constantly auditioning. And for, like you said, even during the slow season, multiple things a day.
Mm.
But you just have to know the camera and know your craft. And then because, yeah, I just did an audition. I called Dan. I go, you want to FaceTime this? I just want to get it over and done with. And I saw it. Now, it was really small. But even something like that, most actors would struggle with because they don't know what to do. I know what to do. And it was in my head in a millisecond that I knew what to do.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to get it over. I had no makeup on. I just put on some scrubs and I did it. But
loving pretty girls say they have no makeup on.
Yeah.
And all the guys are going, you don't need makeup. What do you need makeup for?
Yeah. I'm not wearing makeup. What's going on?
Seriously?
Yeah, I know. It's like
fantastic.
This naturally.
You are a natural beauty.
It's the light.
Yeah.
No, but I just knew what to do. So I actually do think that if I had 4 auditions that were substantial, I feel like I could do it and I'd be excited to do it just because I know what I'm doing so well.
Yeah. I'm just a stick. Like, my thing that I need to work on is just
learning lines.
Learning lines. Lines are a big thing for me. And if I don't know it, and I just, I'm a lot better now where I'm just comfortable going, okay, and you're learning how to take it off the page and all that sort of stuff. But
no, for people who have trouble, because I have a very good memory, I learn lines instantly. Ugh. And so it allows you to play.
I know, right? Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
I'm like Harry.
Yeah.
Not quite Harry. Photographic, but I can pretty much look at something and after reading it through a few times, it's in.
Yeah.
And that's it. I was like that. And that's how actually, you know, my whole thing with becoming an actor was because I was, I had a teacher who said, you have to understand, I was doing a Shakespeare class and he said, to understand Shakespeare, you have to act it, which he was very smart to do. But I did not want to be an actor at the time. I had no intention, never done it before. I was a performer, but not an actor. And I was seriously thinking, how can I drop this class? I do not want to take this class. But I was forced to do it. And I picked a group of people, and it was the witch scene in Macbeth. And I was witch number three.
Oh, number three is the best one.
I thought number four was the best one.
Was the smallest part. And I said, I can get away with this. And I'll just be there stirring in the pot, bubble, yeah. double, toil and trouble, whatever. And when Macbeth comes in, I don't know if I have to turn around three times and spit, which is the...
Well, you're not in...
A theater.
You're not in the theater, so you're
okay.
Fine.
Okay.
you know about that, the curse? The Macbeth curse?
No, I don't.
So it's, if you say, you have to call it the Scottish play, or you can't call it Macbeth in the theater.
You have to say it the Scottish play, because Scottish there's bad play. Luck.
Or else
there's so many bad things will happen to your production.
Yeah.
So you can't, even if it's not Macbeth, you can't say Macbeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, my point is that I had memorized everybody's line by the end of that first. You know, everybody was still reading from their textbook. And so what happened was the day before, Macbeth was still not off book. He was having trouble with Macbeth. And so I kept on feeding him the line. I was feeding everybody's line, and I didn't have, and everybody at the end said, you've got to play Macbeth. And I said, what the fuck? No, I'm not going to go from playing Third Witch to then playing. And they said,
what about Lady Macbeth?
No, it was the scene. We had worked weeks on, you know, the scene where Macbeth comes
in. Oh, I get you. I get you now. I'm sorry.
A four-header.
Yeah.
And they said, if we don't, we're going to fail the class, you know, because a lot of our grade was contingent on doing this on the stage. And I was sweating, and I realized I don't want to fail the class, and they're right. So I ended up playing Macbeth, and I just started off being on stage, and I was just kind of reading the lines like a normal person. Then I got into it.
Yeah.
And I just remember one time I stood on a chair and I, you know, unblow whatever the lines were, and I shouted it, and everybody, and something awoke in me that had been lying dormant. But I just remembered it happened because I knew everybody's lines.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's very, very good.
It's a wonderful story.
Demonstrate, you know, that I...
You learn lines brilliantly.
Brilliantly.
And I do not. I do not.
I feel like it's something it's not a skill. You can get better at it, but
absolutely.
You either have...
Well, I know people who have been on like soap operas for a very long period of time, and they become brilliant. It's a muscle. They become brilliant at just learning lines and like learning lines quickly on the fly.
20 years on a soap.
Oh, damn.
She could do 25 pages, read over three times, and she had it down.
That's crazy. And then, I also heard...
Easy. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Uh-huh. I was like, no, easy. No, yeah. I'm joking. I think that would be a struggle.
Well, some people get those kind of memories. I had a buddy who I played football with. He was like that. He knew every position, what everybody during a play, what everybody could do. He was like... But the bad part was he would learn, like, they had joke books up back in those days.
Oh, no.
And there was a book about how many something could you squeeze in the Volkswagen, right?
Yeah.
Remember those kind of jokes? Well, there's a book on it.
Yeah.
And there's like 1,000 jokes.
Very, very probably inappropriate, un-PC jokes right
very
now.
Very much yes. so. And he would start going through the jokes. And the first ones were kind of funny, but he would go on and like 30 jokes, 40 jokes, like...
Dude, we're about to take a snap here.
He's like... But this guy, he's in the Hall of Fame. He was like a tremendous football player.
Oh, wicked.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
So you had to listen to more jokes than you wanted to.
Can you say who he is?
Can you name drop?
Dave Casper.
Oh.
He was a tight end for the Oakland Raiders.
Ah, the Raiders back in the demon days, or yes, was that the 80s or was that the 80s or 90s? When was the like the full on 70s and 80s?
Yeah, he was on that team. He was good.
Wicked.
Great guy.
Do you still catch up with a lot of your NFL buddies?
A couple of guys. He's one of the guys I keep in touch with a bit. Yeah.
Do you still
do you bring them to taste?
No. Do you still you still love it? You still watch the games and stuff like that? No.
I don't watch the game.
Is there any team that you root for?
No. I went to see my buddy a couple weeks ago. I told you about that, Phoenix. And it was funny. I'm sitting there and, you know, like you've been away for a long time. So I'm on the sidelines and they're practicing, right? And I'm sitting there and tears are coming to my eyes because those are like,
the good old days.
Some great days, right?
And then the smell as well of the grass.
No, it was artificial turf, so there's no grass. Oh, and so I bring the players around, and like the biggest name player on the team, probably in the history of this organization, it comes up and he's like a guy, you know?
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Who is he?
No attitude.
Tell us.
I can't remember his name.
Okay.
prolific.
If I said his name, I mean, he's a famous wide receiver.
Yeah.
Biggest wide receiver I've ever seen in my life. He was about 6'3", 230.
Oh,
not Washington.
What team was it?
The Phoenix Cardinals. I know, famous.
Sorry. That's my thinking tap.
Famous. He's a great guy. I feel bad. I can't remember his name.
Yeah. Oh.
It'll come to us after.
Yes, it'll come. As soon as I'm in the car leaving, I'll go, I'll call you up. And tell
you. Just put this in. Put this in.
Sorry, interrupting.
But great guy. And what brought that up? Oh, that's the only team. I might watch them this year, maybe. But it's hard to watch a game. The game's changed a bit.
Oh, do you mean... You said Phoenix Cardinals, and that confused me. You mean Arizona Cardinals?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Julio Jones? Is that it?
No, Julio Jones. No.
Yeah. Is it Julio Jones or Julia Jones? Is he Arizona?
Julio Jones, yeah, but...
Is he Arizona? No. Brandon Marshall? No.
I just want to say Dan Phoenix is in Arizona.
No, I know, but they're called Arizona Cardinals. Yeah, I thought it might have been a different kind of tier or something like that.
That's right.
I just said that
not to like what you done, but because you're a foreigner.
Yes.
Because you're from Australia. No, because Americans don't know their own states. And this is true. I mean, we do like maybe a semester of geography in high school. I mean, I've met people from other countries who are so good.
You had to learn to get your visa and stuff. You had to learn more about the country than we know about.
Not too much. If I want to become a citizen, which I can. I think I can this year. I can become a citizen. But I was having a look at the 100 questions that they may ask you. And I'm like, oh my God. Yes. And then my friends.
I could never pass it.
Yeah. My friends are kind of like, yeah, this is amazing. He says, people who become citizens, who are like, you know, legal immigrants become citizens, are like, know more about like civics and things like that than the majority of Americans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could not tell you about the Bill of Rights.
Well, that's like me in Australia. Like, I probably don't know remotely anything towards what you know, people who have become Australian citizens do. So, you know, it goes both ways.
Yeah.
But I just don't need to do that. But
anyway, the game is, it's really different. Like quarterbacks, they changed the blocking and the whole setup now. So quarterbacks have a lot more time back there. And they don't get touched like Tom Brady, the one everybody talks about now, who's a great quarterback, no question. But nobody touches him.
Mm.
So it's like practice.
And you get in trouble if you do touch him.
Well, pretty much.
Yeah. Wait, why?
Well, they...
Safety.
Yeah, they don't want him to get hurt. If he gets hurt, then he's out, and then nobody wants to watch the Patriots anymore, is their feeling.
I think, like, you can't...
But this has to go with every football team now. Yeah. Or is it just Tom Brady?
No, it's every football team. But like,
But Tom Brady will get the quarterbacks like him and Drew Brees. They'll get a ref will be really diligent about calling anything that happens to him. Versus other quarterback, they might kill him, and they'll. It's okay.
It was a legal play. I think what is it? There's a certain point where you're not allowed to hit them. Like once they've thrown the ball in the process of throwing the ball, like something like that. Or
watch any game. 10, 15 years ago with a great quarterbacks then, and they'll get killed.
Yeah.
I mean, they get killed. But what makes those quarterbacks really great
is they're back there and they could get blindsided and just hammered. And that's the game.
Yeah.
But to keep that kind of cool under that kind of pressure and still deliver the ball like they do, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the way they are now, they hardly get, some of them hardly get touched, and it just changes. So there's not that kind of pressure to, if I don't get this ball away and, you know, on time, I'm going to get killed.
So it was that, and it, like, did they do something intentional to give them more time, or is it, as you said, it's different?
Well, they wanted more offense.
Yeah.
So they changed the blocking. Oh, okay, so you can block. There's different ways to block now. And there's different ways to cover. You can't cover a receiver like you used to.
Yeah.
You know? So the receivers can get open. So it gives them more points.
More
so they
points, score more money. Points. More points, more money. That
they
kind of thing.
More people will watch. No. And that's the way it is.
Fair enough.
So it's about the money.
It seems like always.
Yeah, it's kind of always about the money. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, it's still a great game.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thoroughly enjoy watching it.
Is
there
a team that you root for, Dan?
I wrote for the Rams. Like, and they're here in LA. But when I was growing up, I had a Raiders cap.
Yeah.
49ers cap, and then when Drew Brees kind of first burst onto the scene, like the Saints as well. But now that I'm in LA, it's the LA Rams. I'm more of a, I just love kind of watching it. And I play like fantasy NFL with friends back in Australia. So
okay,
you become
you're a fantasy guy. I'll give you a little thing.
Okay.
The quarterback for the Cardinals.
Okay.
The first guy picked this year. And everybody said he was too short. Right?
Yes.
Tyler.
Isn't he?
Tyler Murray or something?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch out for that guy.
Okay, cool.
He can throw.
Or also the Kansas City Chiefs guy. What's his name?
Well, yeah, he played last year, though.
So yeah. Oh, okay. You mean new. Okay, new.
I'm talking about this year. The first guy picked, and everybody said, oh, he can't play because he's like 5'6 or 5'8 or something.
Wasn't, what's really? His face from the. Yeah.
But he can.
He's the good. Quarterbacks are getting taller and taller.
No, he's talking about this one who's 5'6.
Oh.
He's 5'8. 5'8.
5'6, 5'8.
Yeah.
He must have one hell of an arm.
He's got a great
arm. He'd be fast.
He's very fast.
Yeah.
But he's... So if you get stuck with him, you won't be stuck.
I'll remember that.
Tyler Murray?
I think... Tyler Murray sounds familiar, but he sounds like he's already a player. Why don't I just look this up?
Well, it's the Cardinals' first round pick that they picked. They picked the first guy.
Keep talking, Remy. I'm going to find this player out.
I don't know. You guys were having your own conversation, but it's sports. I get it, you know, because, I mean, I do know a lot about football. I don't watch football anymore, although I will. The last game I watched was the Super Bowl that the Giants were in.
Kyler Murray. Correct.
Tyler?
Yes, Tyler.
Tyler Murray.
Yeah.
You know, and I got into it.
Kyler, sorry. I'm sorry.
It's not Tyler.
Kyler.
I'm just going to stop
Murray.
Talking.
With a K. Yeah.
With a K.
Kyler. Yeah.
Oh, it is with a K. Okay. Did you say something?
Yeah.
No, I said nothing at all. No, I was just saying that I will root for the Giants and I will watch the Giants play because I'm an East Coaster.
Yeah.
But
not
that
the Jets?
Doesn't mean anything. No, I've been, well.
What's the difference between, is it like, New York Giants and New York Jets, like they're two parts of.
They're in different divisions.
They're different planes.
What?
Oh, one's a giant plane.
Yeah, one's a jet plane.
No, they're in different divisions.
Like, are they two parts of? But also, are they two parts of New York, like North and South New York, or something like that?
I have no idea.
Well, I don't know.
No, it's right? Just one's in the NFC and the other's in the AFC.
Yeah, so different division.
Different division. But if you're watching a football game, it really doesn't matter. As much as you used to. Yeah. But it's like...
It's like the Clippers and the Lakers.
It's like the Clippers and the Lakers.
They both play at the same time.
My brother is a huge Steelers fan, though.
But they don't have any competition. They get the Steelers. I mean, in Pittsburgh, that's all there is.
Yeah.
New York, they got 100 teams. In LA, it's like the Dodgers and the Angels.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, why is that? What is Pittsburgh?
I think it's population, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Population. Like LA is such a, well, I mean, California is the fifth biggest economy in the world or something like that. Yeah. So like the more people they have, then.
So they can have two different teams.
Oh, yeah. You know, and New York's the same way. Like, populated.
Very populated. Yeah. So like it's LA Rams and LA Chargers, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
How are they doing right now?
Rams, good. Damn good.
Oh, Rams are, yeah.
Yeah.
The Chargers?
I think so so. Like oh, they had the they on. Have the
they
cattle
were in the playoffs.
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. All right. Well, I stand corrected. I stand corrected. Yeah, but the like the Rams. That.
Nobody looks at them like.
Yeah, the Rams just got Clay Matthews as a defensive.
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah, right. that's a big get.
I think so.
Yeah. So anyway, what else should we talk about besides sports so we can include Romy?
I'm actually fine just listening.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm cool.
That's cool. Any other sports beside hockey and like come in with anything at any time.
No, I'm just, actually, because I'm very interested. It's actually very engaging to watch.
Is there any other sport that you like besides
golf and hockey?
Golf.
Well, skiing. How about skiing?
Really?
You guys ski?
No.
No.
Everybody looks at me with disgust when I say I've never seen the snow.
What?
Yeah, exactly. That's never reaction. I've seen sleet, but I've never seen full on, you know, say like Chicago or New York snow. I've never seen anything like that.
We should take him to where it's snowing. He'd be like that puppy you see in the videos that's experiencing snow for the first time. I can see him bouncing around
and just shove like my head into it and stuff like that.
Big puppy eating the snow.
Yeah,
right.
No. Totally.
What was your first reaction? Do you remember when you saw snow?
I grew up in Michigan. I grew up with snow.
So you were born in snow.
But I don't remember. But we must have had a reaction when we first saw it.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, me neither.
It was just part of our life. It was like snow.
Well, yeah, it's just like you grew up with that. So it was just nothing
I've never
normal.
Been in so cold that when you spit, it's frozen before it hits the ground. Have
really?
You ever been in cold like that?
Well, obviously, no.
No, you haven't. Have you been that? If you spit, it freezes. You can hear it crackle when it hits the ground.
That's so cool. That's Did you play any games in that kind of snow?
Not that kind, but yes.
Oh, what was that like? Was that fun? That's a no.
No. What happens is in the games that I got to play in, most of the time it was, you really want to win. I mean, the most important thing is winning. Yeah. And if it's something impedes the getting the best performance.
And that was snow.
Well, not necessarily snow. If you couldn't get traction.
Yeah, yeah.
So if it rains too hard. So if it rains too hard.
Yeah, if it rains too hard or any of those things. If you couldn't do the best you could to win the game, it took the fun out of the game.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I mean, you really wanted to win. If you're making a cut and you slip, or somebody makes a cut and you're trying to get them and you slip, or you can't catch the ball because it's too wet or something happens or too much mud.
So how do you feel about rugby? Because that would be the European. The European?
European.
It's a little early for me. Still. Yeah. European equivalent.
Rugby's a great game.
Do you
and
play?
Football used to be like rugby.
Really?
Really. Telltale.
Watch how, well, when football didn't have equipment, they tackled like they do in rugby.
Oh.
There was.
I think I have heard something like that, but yeah.
And if they wanted to, if they really wanted to get rid of all the concussion, a lot of the concussion stuff, just take away all the equipment, and you'll
see players will be like way more.
What is it about the equipment?
It's a weapon.
Yeah,
your helmet's a weapon. Your shoulder pads are a weapon.
I thought it was protective gear.
Yeah, but it is. But you can use it to like if you're like, oh, okay, my head's protected. I can go head first and just go berserk and just nail this person without any regard for my safety.
But for I never played, but my buddies in college, a lot of them played rugby. Mm. Football is a game where you can't cross this line. So when they say it's a game of inches, your job is you want to stop them now, right here or back, right? So if I want to tackle you, I want to stop where that ball is there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In rugby, you want to, my guess is you want to just bring him down so he either keeps the ball or he pitches it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's not a game of inches. So my objective is not to, in football, I'm trying to stop you there. So when you're running full speed this way, I'm trying to keep you there. If you're here, it could mean another touchdown or another first down, which means so I need to stop you there. So it's way more of a collision sport where I'm you're going to hit me as hard as you can. I'm going to hit you as hard as I can directly. So you're like this. And rugby, it's more like, right, and they pull you down.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And also in American football, you can get hit at any angle. Like you can get hit by the entire team from all different angles.
And rugby,
you can, but the way it's set up, it's a lot more front on. And you see where the player is coming from. You see no blindsiding or anything. I mean, it does happen occasionally.
Yeah.
But also, I kind of feel when you don't have the equipment, like the headgear, you are much more cautious of where your head goes. You've got much better tackling technique.
Yes. Tickling.
Right. Tickling.
That would be really funny in a football game or a rugby game. Just going for the tickle.
Just tickle. Get them down.
That'll disarm them.
But if you took away NFL players' helmets and protection, you'll see how much different they would play. Yeah. And they'd be like, okay, my head's going to get absolutely crunched here. So I need to be better at technique and use my shoulders and things like that and tackle around the legs. And it'll be a little bit different because players can then, you know, you might not necessarily stop them in their tracks and things like that. But that's
but here's how I see it. And when they compare games in terms of just look at how many games you can play in a week, right? And basketball, you can play
four
games a week.
Yeah, yeah. Three or four.
Right? Yeah. Baseball, 20 games a week. Rugby, they'll play three or four games in a weekend.
Yeah, I mean, like
the tournaments and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the type of tournament it is and stuff like that. But yeah,
in football, you can't play a game a week is max.
Yeah,
I mean, there's guys that can't move till Wednesday when they play on Sunday.
Mm. Oh, really?
They won't even practice all week.
Really?
Yeah. They might not practice all week.
You've also got like 300-pound dudes just like crunching you.
Yeah, and by Saturday they're coming around and they can. I mean,
I would love to see behind the scenes.
In a football game,
just rehab.
Like a football game. Like I remember one time I got up the next day and I thought, I think I sprained both my ankles. Did I sprain my knees? I don't think I did. I thought every part of my body was hurt, like I was injured.
Oof.
Say there's hurt, which you always play hurt, but when you're injured, you can't play. But I thought, I can't move.
Was this before ice baths as well and things like that?
No, ice baths were big then.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it's just interesting because I remember from my high school team, they would play a game on a Saturday or Friday, and then they're back to practice on a Monday.
Well, so you're back to practice.
Yeah.
Okay.
But a lot of times you can't practice. I mean, the pros, you can't. A lot of times you
can't. Well, that's what, you know, it's differentiation. But
what they do is in the pros you got the game, and the next day you might go. A lot of times the next day is the day off, or the next day is you go watch game film and you
recovery.
Jog a mile. Yeah. You just jog a mile, which could take you a half an hour. I mean, just walk a mile. And then you have the day off, then you're back at it like Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah. I always see with rugby league and rugby union, they'll have a game and then the next day they'll be at the pool, just like walking in the pool, or they go to the beach if their team's located next to a beach, just to like get that kind of...
Yeah.
I can see them doing water aerobics with the seniors.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, it is that kind of stuff. You see them in the line, you're just kind of like just jogging in their little, you know, DTs or dick togs, as we like to call them. Budgie smugglers as well. And they're just,
budgie,
you know...
Budgie smugglers.
Nice. Yep.
So by the way, so your daughter graduated?
No, she's... she graduated fifth grade, if you call that graduation. Yeah,
fifth grade. You can call it graduation. Yeah. I think we had a sixth grade graduation and an eighth grade. And then,
yeah.
Of course.
My boys did the eighth grade graduation two nights ago and the other one in the fifth grade yesterday.
Fantastic.
It's been a big graduation week.
So yeah, absolutely.
How have you balanced being a professional actor with being a father? Because there is a balance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you get to spend time with them?
I'm not that busy, so it's not too tricky. When I get a job, it might be a couple of days or a week or something. Mm-hmm. So it has been, you know, if I was on a series, that would be
different kettle of fish. Well, I mean, they're getting to, I mean, not yet, but they're close to getting to the age where you might not necessarily have to keep an eye on them all the time.
Yeah.
Are you completely comfortable with it, you know, being quiet here and there and stuff like that, and you've got You said you've got other things that you're focused on. Yeah.
We've made a couple of good investments. And
yeah, there we go. That's smart. That's helped a lot. That's smart. And, property?
Yes.
Yes. I'm always told property.
I've heard that too.
One thing I regret about after Spartacus, I should have like just invested in property or something like that instead of spending money on stupid shit. Oh, God. Anyway, moving on.
What kind of stupid shit did you buy?
No. No, I do.
He's talking about hookers.
Hookers and blow. No, I would do stupid stuff like buying first class tickets. Oh. Like back and forth from places. And that's like 15, 16 grand right there. And it's like, you dumb idiot. When I look back on it, I'm like, you silly man. Anyway,
do you know, live and learn. I attended a table read and at the time, my boyfriend's place, and a bunch of well-known series, regular actors, all recognizable faces were coming in. And I was shocked because they had crappy cars. Crappy clothes, and I thought, my God, you can't afford, like, you know, yeah. Just.
Oh, we can, but we're just
And they can. Yeah. Yes, absolutely, they can. But it comes down to, and a lot of people don't know this, because even if you're on a series, you're always worried about your next job. Mm-hmm. They've learned how to manage their money. And so they realize, you know, even if they've been working consistently and they're very grateful, but every job they're on, they think, you know, I might not be working for another 6 months, and then they go on and work again. But they're aware of that. And I think a lot of people who aren't in the industry don't realize it's such a gamble. And so investments, like like yourself, Greg, the people I know who are financially solvent, it's because, in the movie stars too, it's because they've made smart investments.
Yep.
Yeah, we got lucky. So it worked out well for us.
Because you never know when the industry is going to spit you out.
Yeah. And they teach that in...
Yeah, he's laughing because it's true. You're laughing because it's true.
It's true.
Yeah. They can chew us up, spit us out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Like we'll move on to this group now. We'll move on to this. And like, you see so many like... actors who were massive in like the 90s or the 80s and things like that, and then disappear for a while, and then all of a sudden they've come back in. It's been like 10, 15 years since they they were there. They were just doing little bits and pieces and things like that. But
And then you had the famous Cosby actor.
Yeah.
I forgot his name, but you know.
Bill Cosby.
Not Bill Cosby,
the guy who was working at Trader Joe's, not Bill Cosby.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yep.
Joe's, and they made a big stink out of that. And yeah, I felt so sorry for the poor guy.
Yeah, this girl. Do you want to tell the story? I don't
remember his name.
Oh, okay, I can't remember his name, but this girl saw him at Trader Joe's, and he was
bagging,
and took a photo and kind of like posted it, like, "Oh my God, look how this person's fallen," and da 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 da, and. What was really heartening about, like, everybody in the industry was kind of like, no, you do not do that, because we all know what it's like.
Yeah.
And he then got like, and he went on, I think,
He got some job offers.
Yeah, he got some job offers and stuff like that.
Really?
He went on to some talk shows and stuff.
Somebody gave him money, which he donated to charity.
Yeah.
Famous person.
Was Tyler Perry? I think he did something.
Tyler Perry did something, but it was, it was a famous singer. Who gave him Nicki Minaj, I think.
I think it might have been Nicki Minaj.
And he was so grateful, but it was like, I mean, the one thing I will say, as cutthroat as it is out here, we will all stand together. Always.
Yeah, because we all know
what the struggle is.
What the struggle is. And I mean, even though we're competitive and we're kind of like, but we all know that, like, someone's like, oh, I'm going through this. You're like, yeah.
Been there, done that.
We know that.
And also they realize that could be you.
It sucks.
Someday.
And I think he went on talk shows and was very humble and just like, no, I love the people at Trader Joe's. They were awesome. And you know, this is what it's like.
But he had to quit his job.
Yeah.
There.
Oh, because of that publicity.
Oh, really?
I think he
might have quit just is like, I don't want the attention to be on, you know, that particular.
Yeah, he had to quit because of that. But but that was still unfair on him. He had to quit.
Yeah.
I know we have to wrap this up.
Yes, we do.
Greg, you have to go. But it was a delight to have you.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you.
No, it's been fantastic. I love hearing the old school stories and stuff like that. And,
Old school stories. Listen to that.
Sorry.
Well, Dan is 12. So.
Yes, I am 12. Yeah.
Since he's a millennial, we'll let it go.
Am I a millennial? I think I'm in that little gap between millennial and something else.
All millennials say that. I think.
Wait, what do is they? What yeah, is what is the millennial?
I don't,
you're not a millennial, by the way.
Isn't millennial 82 onwards or 81 or something? I don't know. I'll have to look this up.
I have no idea.
I have no idea.
I do know a couple of them though.
Yeah.
What are these? Okay, what is this new generation called? Is what I'm saying.
Oh. Millennial wannabes?
Yeah. We wish we were millennials. The new baby boomers? No. I don't know.
I don't know. They're called something.
They're called something else.
But
it's the first generation that has been completely phones and all that sort of stuff. No, like we were all in between no phones and that kind of technology to being with phones and technology. They are completely in the phones and technology and the internet and all that sort of stuff. So whatever they are, they're the first generation, I think, graduating from college now or something.
I don't know what they call them now.
Yeah.
Something.
Or whatever they are, we'll look it up. I don't know what we are either.
Yeah.
I've never followed that.
But it's been an absolute pleasure, dude.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure to meet you as well.
Thanks, you guys. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Works out.
Oh, yeah. With amazing people like yourself being a part, like guests of our show.
I hope you get really amazing people so the show goes, you know.
Oh, you are really amazing people.
No, but this is why I asked you. And I asked you very early on before we even started posting. You know, we were getting our back catalog together and I said, I want to ask him.
Yeah.
And so you were. Dan knows this. You were one of the first on our list.
Yeah, one of the first.
Look at that. Thanks, you guys.
There you go. So,
look how special you are.
How about that?
Yeah.
Excellent. Is there any way we can see your Viagra commercial? Is it online?
Yes, it is online, actually.
Really?
There we go. It's a commercial where those motorcycles. What happens? I come home from work every day.
Stressed out.
Yeah, stressed out in a Volkswagen.
Things aren't working correctly.
I forget what it is. So I'm sitting there and I pull in. It shows me pulling in. The wife's there pulling in. Like 3 or 4 times pulling in. Just a different tie on, I think. And then one day I come up in a motorcycle. And the wife's all excited to see me.
Was that the motorcycle that you crashed? I'm just kidding.
No, it wasn't.
Later on. Okay, but thank you so much.
On that note.
See how I brought that all together?
Yes, you did. It was great.
Fantastic.
I was such an idiot
on that motorcycle, but go ahead.
Fantastic. It's been a pleasure, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We hope you have an amazing day.
Thank you.
So grateful to have had you.
Thanks, buddy.